Welcome to the Relatable Finance Podcast. Here are your hosts, Joseph Carl and Shane Phillips.
Welcome to today's episode of Relatable Finance. Today, we're going to discuss the decoupling of the U.S. and Chinese economies. Last year, there was a ton of talk about the trade war between the U.S. and China. And while a phase one trade deal was reached and the direction of things may change somewhat with the Biden administration, it is still widely expected that China and the U.S. will diverge from one another. While it may not seem like a big deal at the moment, this has massive ramifications long term and will impact us, all of us, in one way or another.
So let's start with a little background of the China economic growth over time. So if we go all the way back to 1960, Chinese GDP was estimated at around $60 billion at a time when the U.S. had a GDP of about $540 billion. So they started off with quite a big difference. China then began to open its economy around 1979, adopting a more worldly view on trade, and at a time where their GDP was about $180 billion versus the U.S. at about $2.85 trillion, so still a much wider margin. Since the 80s, they have instituted reforms for the working class and have built amazing infrastructure throughout the country and have built some pretty important cities. And thus, China's economy has grown significantly. They enjoyed great growth throughout the 80s and 90s. And then in the early 2000s, Goldman Sachs referred to them as one of their BRICS, which were the main emerging market countries along with Brazil, Russia, and India. And since then, GDP has risen from about $1.2 trillion to about $14 trillion today. That is pretty incredible growth over the years and has made them the second largest economy in the world. And their economy has been one of the real success stories of the emerging markets.
But recently, there have been a number of things that have occurred that has caused U.S.-China relations to worsen. China, which comes out with its strategic economic plans every 5 years, recently came out with its One Belt, One Road initiative in 2013, which is aimed at investing in large infrastructure projects in Asia and Africa to help expand trade market by investing in over 70 countries and organizations. As a whole, this region has significant economic growth potential, and by moving early, China can have greater influence throughout that region. Well, not a deliberate move, it's a clear sign that China wants to have a greater influence over that region and be a bigger player on a global stage.
But China's expectation of becoming a bigger player hasn't been easy. A couple of years later, what we saw were the initial stages of the trade war. During President Trump's campaign in 2016, he promised to take a hard stance on China and followed through with that when the White House initiated an investigation into China's intellectual property transfer policies.
That eventually set the stage for tariffs. The U.S. would start by imposing tariffs on solar panels, washing machines, and steel in 2018, and China would retaliate by imposing tariffs on U.S. goods. Phase one of a trade deal was reached in the latter part of 2019 with the intent of further discussions and additional agreements to be had later on.
And then COVID happened. As we all know, COVID originated in China, and some have called into question China's handling of the matter. We know that they didn't communicate as early as possible, but did they withhold information? And if so, how much? Did they intentionally withhold information for their own benefit, or did they do some of this unintentionally? No one will ever know, but these are things that probably added a little more fuel to the trade war fire.
In short, COVID has done three things. It has delayed further trade negotiations as everything has been focused on containing the virus and recovering from the pandemic. It's called into question China's response and motives. Was this a complete accident? To what extent was information withheld? And how long was it delayed? As Shane mentioned, we may never know the answers to those questions, but the timing of all this is rather questionable. And lastly, COVID has caused many countries to take a more inner focus on their economy, their supply chains, etc.
One area that came up during COVID were numerous reports of difficulty getting PPE equipment out of China. Now, the fact that China was a main producer of these products could be a problem for countries like the U.S. who depend on China for these goods. As Joe mentioned, COVID has likely caused countries to look at themselves, their own economy, their own supply chains, and think about being able to access things like PPE. No matter what happens with the trade war, having less dependence on other countries' exports could ultimately be a good thing for countries like the U.S.
So now let's switch gears to the economic and investment implication. And let's first be honest, we and no one is really sure how all of this is going to play out. Never in the world's history have we gone from such a complex and integrated global economy, which we achieved through decades of promoting free trade and globalization. So it's impossible to know how things may unfold from here. But we can discuss some of the factors at play and the likely trajectory.
So let's first consider what we gain from trade with China. One of the benefits with trade with China is that we have been able to have cheap goods made there, and that has really helped consumers in the US. Initially, this started off as more labor-intensive items as China became the world's manufacturing hub. China's labor force is roughly 5 times that of the US, and wages there are much, much lower, and thus they produce cheaper goods. Companies would locate labor in China and then ship the goods elsewhere. Over time, China's economy has evolved. More recently, the major things we buy from there are electronics, including smartphones, and things like apparel and footwear.
As China's economy grew, U.S. exports to China grew as well. In 1990, the U.S. exported $4.8 billion worth of goods to China, and in 2017, right before all of the tariffs started, $130 billion. That's roughly 20% annual growth over an 18-year period. Our biggest exports to China includes things such as airplanes, semiconductors, and Shane's favorite mid-afternoon snack, soybeans.
So one thing we discuss a lot is the difference between where a company is located and where they actually have their revenues come from. The U.S.-based S&P 500 has around 35 to 45% of their sales come from outside the U.S. China makes up about 4% of that. And while that is not a huge number, the dollar equivalent is still very important. And like the U.S., many other countries are also relying on China as well.
At the end of the day, the U.S. and China have differing goals or objectives. The U.S. wants to create a level playing ground for U.S. companies operating in China, protect the intellectual capital that we have, and reshore some jobs back to the U.S. China wants to continue its economic growth and become a world power. It's because of these competing objectives, the economic might of these two countries, and viewing these challenges in the future through their own lenses that creates this tension. And if things continue as they currently are, it's going to create two different markets, or it most likely will. One that is U.S.-led and its allies, and one that is China-led and its allies. And companies are going to have to learn how to navigate these different environments.
So when we take all this into consideration, what does it mean from an investment perspective? One thing you will want to do because of some of these occurrences is to make sure to have a nimble strategy. Don't get tied into specific beliefs and be unwilling to change. China has a very small allocation for most global indices, yet they're the world's second largest economy. But as we showed in the earlier GDP growth of China, that was a slow process that changed over time. So be willing to make changes as well.
Next, you want to invest in companies with pricing power, or said another way, companies that are able to raise their prices while also growing their revenue. Since China opened its economy, we've all benefited from the low prices of goods they produce. And as we start to decouple, some of those benefits will start to go away. Different aspects of the supply chain will start to change, so companies that can continue to raise their prices and pass on these higher costs to customers will be able to continue to grow.
You may also want to consider your exposure to large U.S. companies, as many are large global companies with global sales, especially U.S. tech companies who have significant sales in China now or are expected to have significant sales in the future. Apple recently announced that it's earned about $8 billion in sales in China. That's billion with a B, but that has dropped almost 30% year over year.
And lastly, you will still want to have investments in and tied to China. Even if the U.S. and China decouple quickly, there's no stopping China's growth. They have grown to the point where they're able to grow a lot on their own, focused domestically, and you'll be able to have diversification and growth by having some exposure there. So to recap today's episode, we're at the beginning of a decoupling between the U.S. and China. And this is a big deal given that these are the two world's largest economies. The decoupling started with tariffs in 2018, and while a trade deal was reached, the coronavirus created further tensions in this relationship. The U.S. and China are viewing the world and future through their own lenses, and at the end of the day, have competing objectives. It's impossible for us to know right now how quickly things might evolve, but we are at the beginning of this stage. Given all of these factors, you'll want to have some adjustments or think about some things for your investment strategy. Be nimble. Perhaps have less U.S. tech exposure with high sales to China, but also still have some exposure to Chinese investments. Thank you for listening to this episode of Relatable Finance. If you have any questions, please don't hesitate to reach out to us at podcast@provwealth.com or check out our website at relatablefinancepodcast.com.
Provenance Wealth Advisors is not a registered broker-dealer and is independent of Raymond James Financial Services, Inc. Securities are offered through Raymond James Financial Services, Inc., member FINRA, SIPC. Investment advisory services are offered through Provenance Wealth Advisors and Raymond James Financial Services Advisors, Inc. Any opinions are those of Relatable Finance Podcast and PWA, and not necessarily those of Raymond James. The information contained in this report does not purport to be a complete description of the securities, markets, or developments referred to in this material. There is no assurance that any of the trends mentioned will continue or forecasts will occur. The information has been obtained from sources considered to be reliable, but Raymond James does not guarantee that the foregoing material is accurate or complete. Any information is not a complete summary or statement of all available data necessary for making an investment decision and does not constitute a recommendation. Investment involves risk, and you may incur a profit or loss regardless of strategy selected. Diversification and asset allocation do not ensure a profit or protect against a loss. Investing involves risk, and investors may incur a profit or loss. Raymond James does not provide tax or legal services. Please discuss these matters with the appropriate professional. Past performance does not guarantee future results. Future investment performance cannot be guaranteed, and investment yields will fluctuate with market conditions. Any examples given in the podcast are for illustration purposes only. Actual investor results will vary.